Okay, so I'm going to speak today about these assumptions, and I would like to emphasize the big question marks here, which is important because it's really a question. And there will be a lot of question marks in the talk, so because it's really something that is not known. My collaborator on this topic are Edouard Audit from the Commissariat Energie Atomique, and Inutsuka-san from Kyoto University. Right, so just very briefly, I show these curves, which is the equilibrium of the phase equilibrium in the ISM. So you have the density as a function of pressure, and so this branch here is for low density and high temperature. This one is for, say, 10 times higher density and 10 times smaller temperature. And within a range of pressure here, there are three possible points of equilibrium. So two are stable and one is unstable. So this is the origin of the thermal instability in the ISM. Okay, I will just go quick, but well, it turns out that, I mean, the various people have studied the dynamics of a two-phase flow. And so here you are seeing a movie of this sort of fluids. So the conditions are so two converging flow, okay, from the left and the right. The flow is able to escape in the two directions. And initially everything was completely blue, okay? So the initial conditions are pure W and M. And all, so you are seeing the density field, so all the red part and the yellow part is actually CNM, which has been sort of self-consistently triggered by the ramp pressure of the incoming flow. And so what you see is a sort of turbulence which develops in a two-phase media. And interestingly, you see a very complex two-phase structures. You don't see phase segregation at all. Okay, even here, you still see that W and M is able to flow around, and it's only 2D. So of course, if you go to 3D, it's going to be worse because you have more paths.
Are we looking at the waves or are we looking at the structures?
Sorry?
Are we looking at the waves or are we looking at the structures?
So well, that's the density field.
Yes, but what are the flow lines? If I take a particular blob, is it the blob of gas that moves?
Or yeah.
The wave that goes.
Oh, no. You mean these things here, for example? No, these are not waves. These are really clouds which sort of fly around, okay? No, there is no density waves. These are really bulk clouds which moves through the WMM. Okay?
Excuse me. The two fluids are collided initially.
Yeah.
Only initially, so I mean, how is.
No, it's maintained. It's maintained. It's maintained. We input continuously a flow from the two boundary, and we let the flow escape. Okay, so these calculations here show you the phase or the time after which a statistical stationarity is reached in the box.
And the flow is before perturbation, but it's otherwise perpendicular.
Parallel to the.
Yeah, parallel.
Yeah. And well, we perturb it a little bit more from the boundary, but basically, yes. This, okay, so these pictures have been, explored further, okay? So in 2D, using even more simulations, either by me and Edouard or by Fabian Eich, and in 3D, and basically you get the same answer, okay? You can do a zoom on the structures here. So there is a kind of, I would say, agreement that this picture seems to be, I would say, robust. Right. Of course, you can study various things, various statistics. It's not the purpose of my talk today to emphasize those. We have been studying, for example, the mass spectrum of the structure and so on, but that's a different issue. And so more recent developments, so 2D here, includes the gravity or MHD. And you can see, for example, here, down structure. So this structure here is about 10 parsec across. Okay. The density scale does not appear, but maybe 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4. Okay. So that could be a mega cloud. And 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4. We don't treat the H2 formation, so this is one of the things that should be improved. But okay, you may expect reasonably that once you reach density of 10 to the 3 rapidly, you start converting your H1 into H2.
I understand. Like you're saying that even if there were no molecule, you can still be forming these very high-density.
Yeah.
So how does that happen? That's a very high pressure.
No, because the density, the temperature drops. The temperature is just the C+ cooling is able to cool until 20, 15 K if the density is high, sufficiently high.
I've done some simulations where we didn't have any H2 formation, just arbitrarily switched off. And yeah, you can get down to 10 K.
Yeah. Surprisingly enough, and I know I discussed this issue with Fabian Eich as well, you just have the standard atomic cooling and you get an answer which actually is not surprisingly close to what you expect even with molecular cooling. So, but that's, of course, these are preliminary calculations. There are many steps which have to go through, but you know, including hydro, gravity, and so on is already an MHD, already a big deal. Yeah. IMR without any refinement level. Okay, so the code is IMR, but I didn't switch on because this doesn't use RAMSES. But IMR is you have to go slowly. So I think first you have to do, in my opinion, simulation without any refinement. And then you see, well, hang on, maybe here I will switch on the IMR to see better resolution. But I think it's important to go step by step. No, nothing particular.
And are you just assuming everything's optically thin?
Yeah. No, there are many issues in thermodynamics that I entirely agree. Okay. So, you can see that the pictures are different, again, with or without magnetic field. Probably the 2D assumption of the magnetic field is quite awful, and you have to go in 3D, and it's even worse, and so on. So there are many issues, but either if you pick up these things, or this collection of things, you don't see a clear phase segregations. Well, maybe there is one starting here, but still you can see the lamps around. And again, it's 2D, and in 3D, it's much worse.
I'm afraid that the problem you would also have in 3D, when you start with this kind of idealized initial condition, where you're just having a compression in one dimension, you're always going to have everything collapse, the matrix being collapsed with some kind of filament. And of course, you have perturbation, the filament breaks into, something. But it's primarily one main filament or one main sheath in the case of 3D. It would not be hard to claim that looks like a molecular cloud, right? Or a system of molecular clouds.
Well, sorry, I didn't catch your point. It's hard or it's not hard to claim? I didn't.
It's hard because, molecular clouds are filamentary, but they're not like one string over 50 or 100 parsecs.
I mean, what you are touching now is the problem of the boundary on initial conditions.
Yeah, how to set it up in a different
So
way.
This is the whole problem of the ISM, and I don't know any universal way of getting rid of this.
I agree, and this is a great progress compared to the kind of even more idealized stuff I do. But I want to just mention this because where you're heading is toward the direction of claiming the molecular clouds, perhaps maybe multi phase.
Yeah.
And I just want to put another question mark on whether that has to do with how we set them up. And if we set them up in a realistic way where they're a little bit more three dimensional, maybe there will be a little less two phase. But you can go on, it was just a comment.
There would be less two phase.
Yeah, because if you start something that is really thin, rather than something that is more three-dimensional,
but
it's only initial condition, three-dimensional converging flow.
Actually, I've done it already, so I just that I'm not displaying here.
Okay.
So in that case, the big restrictions with the magnetic field, if you really want me to do it that way, is the 2D magnetic field is equivalent to the 1D hydro, in the sense that if this is the field line, there is no way that I can go around the field line. And what you are seeing here, okay, is the consequence of this. Because Okay, there is no way the flow is able to move around. In 3D, you get rid of this problem because you have several field lines and you can contour it. Okay, and therefore, what I see in 3D is intrications of filaments, which then can twist or whatever. But I mean, they can do much more complex things.
I see this structure very loudly, get something more flat than very flat.
And also, there is an issue regarding the strength of the field. Here, I start with the 6 micrograms, which have been measured. But if you start with the lower field, then you have something which looks more like this.
Okay.
There are many issues, and here I don't want to do a very detailed point. Just to give you a general trend, that hydro, MHD, 2D, 3D, whatever, you always get this sort of, you don't see clear phase segregation.
I don't understand.
Which it is?
There is very clear.
Well, I don't know. If you look at these things here, okay, I can see here WNM and then here WNM and then here CNM and WNM. I mean. It depends what we call phase segregations. What we have found in this 2D or 3D structure is that you produce a mass spectrum of CNM structure with some power law. So you have big structure and small structures. If I pick up these things or these things or these things, then yes, I will find that it's a kind of uniform. But I mean, at the scale of this object, you can see the gas everywhere in between. I mean, that's my point. You don't see a nice spherical object.
But I mean, some of this is because you're assuming that the whole thing's optically clear, so you're missing the shielding.
Maybe. I mean, I will come back. I'm just come back to this issue.
To some extent.
I just come back to this. This is exactly, that will be exactly my point in a few minutes. Right. First, before I go, I just would like to emphasize this because it is directly linked. I wonder whether in this supersonic electromass simulation, there is no pressure problem. And actually, you can see it quite easily. So the mean density inside GMC is 100 cubic centimeter. The clamp density is more 10 times higher, okay, so 1,000. And the consequence of this is that the filling factor is small, say 0.1, maybe sometimes the smaller value are quoted. So if we indicatively say that say 10% of the mass, okay, is 90% of the volume, yeah.
Disagree with that conclusion in a minute.
Okay, good. because I will trigger the. Okay, so that implies that the density in the clamp is going to be, say, typically 100 times smaller than the density in the clamps. So that's about 10 per cc. And I mean, if you just assume a ramp pressure confinement at Mach 10, you would get typically the same density. So if you I multiply this, say, the interclamp density by the temperature, okay, I find 100.
But if density was, it wouldn't be 10K, it would be 30.
Well, okay, then in that case, instead of having a 40, you would have 10 here. It's still a big problem.
I've gone and looked at what it is in my simulations, it's 100K.
So you strangled my point. No, but that, then, so then you agree that you have atomic gas inside the molecular cloud.
I agree that the isothermal approximation doesn't hold down to.
Okay.
Yeah,
but 100. I mean, 100. You are precisely on the way to produce a two-phase object.
You mean stable?
Well, now 100 is CNM. So now in your simulation, you prevent by the boundary the formation of WNM. And so my point is just that if you would have. Well, I just come to that rapidly.
How can you have a 10 cc gas that 10 kelvin maybe understand something?
Sorry?
How can you physically have 10 cc gas at 10 kelvin?
Well, because, I mean, that's by assumption, that's by consumptions. I'm just discussing about this isothermal simulation which have been done.
That's in physics, right? You have turbulence that is 5-6 kilometers per second, so any shock would drag you to several hundred kelvin, and then you cannot cool to 10 kelvin at 10 cc.
No, the problem is different. When you have a shock of dense gas, therefore you cool immediately to 10 k. The problem is when you have...
Not at 10 cc.
No, but you don't have 10 cc behind the shock. The 10 cc is in the voids, typically in the simulations.
Well, the shocks are everywhere, shocks. Think of
broke. But anyway, they will be warmer simply because the balance of heating and cooling is such that they cannot be at 10 Kelvin. They will be at 50, 100 Kelvin.
Okay. So, I mean, just to iterate on this, so the fan speed of the WNM is 10 km per second, okay, which implies that molecular clouds are indeed subsonic with respect to the fan speed of WNM. And I think WNM should penetrate. If you have a low pressure, it should penetrate immediately. Yeah.
But that's assuming the thermal pressure is the only thing holding the keeping the WNM now.
Okay. I'm just, if you want me to discuss this, we can discuss it. But okay. Just let me finish. Let's say you can restrict these to purely thermal no magnetic field if you want to start with. So strictly speaking, it means that actually the turbulence cannot be isothermal, and this is exactly what you said. And my worry is that in that case, you may have less focused motions because then if the sun speed, okay, is higher, you are doing decaying turbulence, so it's slightly different from the turbulent driving. But if the sun speed is higher, then the waves travel faster and they have more time to establish the pressure gradient. So there is a question mark here. I'm not entirely sure, but I would like to see the result. Yeah.
Can you say the Mach number from the molecular cloud is about 10? It means that the turbulent pressure of the cloud will be about 100 times the thermal pressure.
Yeah. This is typically, the Mach number 10, 2 km per second for a velocity dispersion of, for a sun speed of 0.2. Well, because in the void, I don't know. In the void, we have velocity dispersions. So your idea is that you may have a turbulent pressure inside the void, which would expel the gas.
But molecular cloud is like a dense turbulent bunch of gas, and if it's like Mach number 10, then I would suspect that.
But my understanding of turbulence is that you don't have of this so-called turbulent pressure, which is a very dangerous concept, I think, is that it does not produce a very isotropic support. Okay, it's going to mix things, and if you have a high velocity dispersion between, in this void, then it's a perfect. It will perfectly match with this picture of mixing the gas. Which is in the surrounding. But I think the problem is even worse than this. I would just wanted to point out this because I think it is relevant in this context. I think the problem is even more severe because I think it's well, maybe not established, but at least admitted that molecular clouds form by the contraction of H1. Okay, and H1. I think there is a sort of agreement between the theorists who have investigated this issue that you really have a two-phase mixture. And as far as we could push the comparison with observations, we could not find any big disagreement with this. So the protomolecular clouds, when they start their life, they are two-phase. Okay, so the initial setup is two-phase. And second, my understanding of turbulence is that it is very efficient to mix everything. So how can, if you take this bottle and you check it, okay, I see a two-phase mixture. So it's, turbulence is doing this exactly all the time. So in my opinion, in order to make, more keen the debate, we have to divide or to assume two assumptions. So this is what I will call the weak two-phase model, okay? And that would be more or less what you just said, that, okay, you have some gas inside, but, it does not change the pictures. And finally, the isothermal assumption is not too bad, and everything is okay. The pressure, you have some WNM, which penetrates in the voids, but well, the pressure is still too low, and finally, cannot strongly modify the dynamics of the cloud. that's a possibility. I will call it the weak two-phase model. And then there is something which I would call the strong two-phase model, which is the assumption that, well, the WNM inside the Mercury cloud has a higher pressure than what it has in the surrounding medium, because Mercury clouds are not standard ISM. Okay, there are more mass, there are more energy here available, and maybe part of this energy could be taped actually to heat the Mercury cloud, the gas inside. Yeah.
Sorry, my ignorance. Why do you need any pressure to confine the ground? Because of the pumps are self-gravitating.
No, they are not self-gravitating. When you look at the CO clump distribution, there is a huge mass range between, extremely, say, 10 to the 7 solar mass for the biggest one. Maybe it's extreme, 10 to the 6. And then you go basically to the 1 Jupiter mass, which is the limit set up by the observations. So they are about almost 10 order of magnitude in mass. And then when you compute the virial equilibrium, this game that has been played by Chris and Frank Bertoldi, you find that there is a limit in mass, which is around, it depends a little bit of the cloud where you are looking for, but typically it's 1,000 solar mass. Can be 100, it depends where you look for. So above this mass, the clouds, the gravity dominates, but below this, the clouds are not subgravitating. But there is a pressure problem that could be maybe ram pressure, why not? But that could be also something else. So you have to confine the cloud by something else than gravity for the less massive CO clump. So the question, I think, in this issue is the following. So can this warm neutral gas survive at high pressure? And then the question is there a heating mechanism more efficient than UV? Because the standard UV that you have in the solar neighborhood can typically provide a pressure up to 4,000 Kelvin per cubic centimeter. And, well, first there is this pressure problem, but also you may say, if I'm in the Mercury clouds, UV may be screened, so I have less UV available, and it makes the problem even worse. Maybe. Also, Mercury clouds are very clumpy, as you know, and you may have some diffusions, which may reduce that a little bit. So there are some unclear issues here, but I agree it's a problem. Okay, so what about mechanical heating? I mean, mechanical heating actually has been investigated by this pioneering work, Falgaron and Puget, and also Fire and Weibel. And so the idea is that you take, say, MHD waves, and so the waves are going to dissipate. That could be by ambipolar diffusions, that could be just because of the stiffening of the waves, so they become nonlinear and they shock basically and they dissipate. So there could be sufficient mechanical heating, maybe, to have denser WNM.
Well, we simulated it and...
No, you simulated in the cold gas, not in the warm gas.
Oh yeah, in the cold gas.
Yeah, that's make a huge...
No, but it's only a difference in the initial conditions. If you claim that that will maintain the warm phase in the molecular cloud, it doesn't matter what initial condition I start with, eventually it has to be self-consistent. Right. So I can say that...
No, because there is an input, there is an issue about the input of energy. In the warm phase, in your simulation, you drive the turbulence, okay? So you assume that the energy reservoir comes directly to your driving, okay? So the heating available cannot be higher than the energy you have input, which is more or less what is available by the turbulence of the cold gas.
Which is more
yeah, but there is also the possibility that the energy flows from the outside of the cloud, okay? And the point, and that's the game of these calculations, the key point is that the Halfen speed is enormous, again, 15 km per second. So if you look to where the energy could come from, okay, you take the cloud and you look at the sphere where all this energy could come from, you see it's very big, actually, because you have this 15 km per second that you don't have, by definition, in your box because it is closed. The reservoir of mass, of energy, are very different in the two cases.
But you look at all energetics, for example,
yeah.
Do you think that there is more energy in the warm neutral medium that makes it into the bodies, in the molecular cloud or in the molecular cloud simulation?
It's not a matter of energy, it's a matter of energy flux.
Yeah,
and the energy flux, okay, is the energy density times the Alphen speed. And the Alphen speed is 10 times higher than the velocity dispersion in the cloud. So the energy flux, if you assume energy partitions, is 10 times higher.
Okay, I'm going back to the, I want to understand why you think that having, take one of my simulations, for example, it's isotherm,
it's idealized. Yeah, no, but I agree, I mean, once again, sorry, let's just move here forward. I mean, I'm not trying to disprove your work. I mean, the Kolmogorov, turbulence. No, no, but sorry, the turbulence, the Kolmogorov turbulence is highly idealized, and it's still very useful.
I don't understand why you think that the world intermedium wouldn't have any effect. So what I'm saying is that let's take those voids.
Yeah.
And in a simulation isothermal, more realistically, we think they should be 100K. But you say maybe they're at 8,000K.
Yeah.
Let's turn those voids. Let's say that some of these are 8,000K.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that that would make any difference in the dynamics, because I think that most of the kinetic energy is still dominated by the coal gas.
So I will come back. Okay, I will propose things later, okay? So just let me a little bit. Right. Okay, so just I will emphasize a little bit these mechanisms. Also, I mean, there may be other mechanisms. This was just one proposition. So first, I just would like to see that if you do the game of saying, okay, I cut my heading, okay, how much time or how deep inside the clouds could the WNM penetrate? The answer is that not too much. Well, there are some uncertainties, and it depends of the pressure. If the pressure is high, you find that it disappears very rapidly in, say, 10 to the 5 and 10 to the 4 megayear. If the pressure is higher, it can be 10 to the 6, so it depends a little bit of how sort of velocity you may guess. Maybe this 1 parsec is a little bit too pessimistic. It could be maybe up to maybe 5 or 10 parsec. But if the pressure is too high, then very rapidly disappear. So it seems that the mechanisms that you may guess of the recirculations having WNM penetrating inside the clouds, escaping and so on, cannot really work. I mean, at least for this, this strong two-phase model I was proposing. So
what cooling function are you assuming
in that case? Well, it's WNM is purely atomic, so we just have standard cooling like Lehmann alpha cooling, C plus, and oxygen. That gives you. Okay. So I don't want to go into this the details. I just want to give you a sort of flavor of what we have done. Basically, you integrate, you assume some wave spectrum, and you integrate the energy which dissipates over time. What I think is more important are the assumptions, and this is the tricky part. I would not bet my salary on these calculations, because I think calculating analytically fluid, the energy dissipation is a fluid, is an extremely difficult game. So I consider this as indicative, and I will show you then some numerical calculation of that very first. So we basically we assume that there is an equipartition between the waves and the mean field. That's an ISM-like assumption. And then we assume that B is proportional to the square root of the density also in WNM, which means that there would be sort of two branches in parallel. One would be the branch of the coal gas, and one would be the branch of the WNM. And this is again ISM-like, because we know, for example, that in the two-phase calculation, in the standard simulation, in the standard conditions, the value of the magnetic field in the WNM and in the CNM is the same. So we are extrapolating this behavior and saying that it's going to continue to be the same even in the Merkur cloud. So this is another assumption which has to be checked. Right. So we have then computed the the thermal equilibrium state, and there are big uncertainties. In particular, it depends on the size of the piece of WNM that you want to hit, because as I was explaining, basically what you do is that you assume that energy comes from around, and if the size is small, then you can put a lot of energy. If it's bigger, you have less energy available. I mean, if you have to share this energy. So these things are just indicative, they're not very realistic. So, but if you take a 2 parsec of WNM, then you can heat up down to sufficiently high pressure, and if you decrease the size, well, you can still get pretty high pressure, I guess.
So the energy is from this compression, what is it?
No, the idea is just that you have you have the cloud, okay, but the cloud is not isolated. It has WNM around, okay, and in WNM you have waves propagating which have a density of energy, okay, and so the idea is that these waves, they're propagating, they reach the clouds, and they dissipate inside the cloud. So you have an energy flux, which is given by this half and speed times the density of the wave energy outside the cloud. So there is a big reservoir of energy inside the cloud. And again, you cannot simulate that properly if you have a closed box.
That's pretty cool. Why can't they just dissipate all of the energy in the WNM outside?
Because, in our calculations, it's because the ionization degree, that's it, drops, because outside the WNM, outside the cloud, the most important ionization agent is the soft X-ray, and that gives you an ionization of 0.1. When you go inside the cloud, the soft X-rays screen very rapidly. You need very small quantum density to screen in. So you have only the cosmic, which are available, and the cosmic can provide an ionization of 10^-2. So there are two gains. The first gain is that, as you know, the drag coefficients is directly proportional to the, in this regime at least, to the ionization degree. And therefore, if you drop the ionization by a factor 10, then these coefficients increase by a factor 10, decrease by a factor 10, and then you have 10 times more dissipation. And also, there is another gain, which is the cooling, because as you know, C plus excitation, for example, or Lyman alpha, is due to the collision between the atom and the electrons. And therefore, if you have less electrons available, then you have less cooling as well. So there are two gains here, which makes a difference.
Looking at that WNM, aren't you dominated by the
Lyman alpha
cooling?
By the? Yeah, I agree. But the Lyman alpha cooling is also dominated by the collision with the electrons. I mean, there are two different gains here. Anyway, once again, I think this is a kind of idealized pictures because it was there's a clear physical mechanism that could be identified here. In my opinion, is that we should maybe not worry too much about friction and so on. You have nonlinear waves, okay? You have waves reaching the cloud. It is a very messy complex, okay? Outside the cloud, the field line may be reasonably straight. And then you reach the cloud, which is a complete mess. Okay, you have a lot of dense clouds around, the field line are completely tangled and so on. The waves cannot propagate anymore, they dissipate in situ. That's, I would say, the more important scheme, and I would not worry too much about the detail exactly of how you dissipate it. Your wave dissipates when they become nonlinear anyway. So in my opinion, the important question, and it actually is very difficult to compute, is the amount of energy which will be injected. And that's very difficult to compute, and I think this is the biggest uncertainty in this proposition, and I don't know the answer. So we have actually started to do some simulation. These are very preliminary, okay, but still. So here we're going to see the standard two-phase, okay, developing. Here we're going to cut the heating to show you what's happened in that case. And here we cut the UV heating, but we trigger waves from the boundary. This is a 1 parsec box, and it's done with the 2-fluid codes by Tsuyoshi Inoue from Kyoto University in PhD with Tsukasa. So here you just see the usual two-phase irrigation. Okay. You see the structures forming and so on. Okay. So here, this is the pressure of the point that you are seeing. All the points, okay, and well, that gives you that here, that shows you that here things are nearly isobaric in these calculations. Yeah. This one?
Yeah.
Here, this is the standard cooling curve of the ISM.
So that's the that's what you get if you have UV.
Yeah, I mean, we have not reached this point in the calculations. Here is a really a feasibility study, very far from any application and so on. It's very, very first, just to see that this idea of mechanical dissipation is not silly at all. Okay? So here I cut the heating. And immediately the structure will expand, and the structure, the gas cools down and is starting to become one phase. Okay? And now I do the same thing, so I cut, suppress again my cooling, my heating, UV heating, but I trigger the waves on the boundary. So you can see in that case you maintain a two-phase behavior. But again, I think this simulation has not run for sufficiently long time, and it's very preliminary calculation.
But Patrick, the right plots on the right hand side are not relevant to this case because there is no heating.
You mean here?
Yeah, it's thermal equilibrium that would have been there if.
No, just to demonstrate, to have to contrast two cases. If you assume, for example, that this piece of gas, okay, would be standard ISM, and suddenly it is green because it enters into a big complex, there is no UV heating. What we say here is just you lose rapidly the two-phase behavior.
Yeah, I agree with that, but the lines, they correspond to thermal equilibrium, which you don't have in those models, right?
I'm not.
You
oh yeah, okay. No, yeah, sure. You mean here the line is not what you should have.
Okay.
No, sure. The line corresponds to what you would have with this UV heating, of course, and what you see that the points are just dropping like this.
Can we use just for reference?
Yeah. Sure. No, I agree. Right. So I mean, here it seems that we sustain this two-phase stuff, just with mechanical dissipation. Yeah. There is no self-gravity here. It's very diffuse H1. Once again, don't try to make it realistic. It's a very first world.
But what do you mean by saying we sustain the two-phase?
Well, you can see that here, the points still.
I don't see the phases here.
Well, you see warm gas and you see cold gas.
Yeah, there is.
You see something similar to what you have here, except that it is broader. That's my point. You see, but with more dispersion, you see the same thing that what you see here. Okay?
What fraction mass is small?
I mean, again, it's very preliminary calculations. Okay? I mean, the important point, I think, the points which are directly relevant for us are those ones. What we want is to maintain this gas around. In this case, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Two fluids are what precisely?
Ionization fluid and neutral. So.
How do you
I guess it's probably proportional to the square root of the density or something.
So, what is your typical ionization fraction?
Well, in the dense gas, it's probably 10 to the minus 4. Okay? In the dense gas, it's probably 10 to the minus 4. And in the warm gas here, it's probably 10 to the minus 2 or 10 to the minus 1, one between one and so on. So that's the standard ionization fraction in the WNM. Okay? And I mean, it depends. Again, the details depend of what's is there any stream sources? It can be subtic rays, it can be cosmic, so it depends of where you are exactly. But typically, these are the numbers from the WNM, because the ionization is very low. Sorry, the density is very low. That's the big difference with the cold gas. Right. Okay. Ah, great.
But sorry, the question is to maintain it inside the cloud,
yeah.
Not outside. So, but, I mean, that's really the stretch of imagination.
No, but the idea was that, okay, if you come back.
But the fact that if you have energy available, you can maintain a certain temperature, that's almost a trivial.
Yeah, I agree.
You can actually make the gas flow through the holes, make it inside
the holes. Well, but
some kind of
but you know that with 90% of holes, I don't call that holes.
Well, 90% of holes, if you look at the densest part that enhances the gaps, which means that lower density gaps, it's maybe less than that.
The filling factor is in Mercator clouds is 10%. Yeah, I mean
that's the filling factor of 1,000 particles per cubic meter. But the filling factor of 100 particles per cubic meter in your same example was 100%.
But you don't see, you don't observe 100 or very few amount. I'm just going back to that now. But when they observe, I mean, these calculations is not me. It's in your paper.
Well,
not only, but.
Just an assemble of clamps
but
jumping around.
That's not me.
For molecular dynamics, is to understand the pressure equilibrium of these clamps. But that's, I have to say, an old-fashioned picture.
Well, Paolo, this is not me which say so. I mean, the observer, I've said this since many years.
So there are a bunch of clamps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Know,
well.
Isolated from each other, surrounded by something that will give the pressure.
That this used to be the standard description of molecular clouds. Maybe the turbulence has challenged these pictures. But there's numbers of mean density and clamp density. They come from integrating over the whole clouds the signal that you received, and then you take the LVG calculations.
No.
You just integrate. I don't think so. You just, if you do bolometric observations, you can have all the signals, convert that into a mass, and then you take the LVG calculations needed to explain your line, and then you find it to the free.
But
again, there is a semantic issue here. I mean, I'm perfectly happy with the higher structures because if you take a mass spectrum of clamp, this is more or less what you would get. Again, this is not the same clamp with the same property. You have a mass distribution, and the two-phase staff produce that exactly, actually.
And
but again, this is more or less what do the two-phase staff. I mean, when you
if you're looking at CO to try and understand something about the density of the cloud, well, you're going to have problems with low density because you don't have much CO. I mean,
yes.
It's a bias tracer.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me just go on.
Yeah, but each one you've got a problem with, you don't I'm arguing in favor of your picture, but I mean, you can't just look at the CO emission and say that you don't understand the structure of the cloud.
But you're right, even from the CO, it's very hierarchical, it's not a bunch of isolated clamps. In fact, it's filamentary, it's not clumpy. We know that the ISM is filamentary, not clumpy. The biggest problem I like to say, your simulations are too filamentary in the main observation. They're changing their mind. At the speeds, and there is no doubt that the structure of
Okay, Paolo, we are speaking now on very vague ground, and if we because the stuff of the article structures and so on, they are not clear. Objective parameter that we can discuss. Okay, so we can do it maybe after doing many simulations, try to define clear indicator and see quantitatively if it fits or not. But having a vague discussion like this, I don't think it's constructive. I don't think so. So, okay, are there some observational evidence of this? Well, I thought it would be extremely difficult to actually prove or disprove this idea, because H1 is ubiquitous in the galaxy, and along each line of sight, there is always some H1. And that was my opinion until I discussed with Leo Beetz, who pointed me out this paper that they wrote in 95 about the rosette, that they observed in CO, in 12 CO and 13 CO, and they took 21 centimeter emission, and they look at the correlation between the two. So you have various examples. For example, here you have the H1, here the 12 CO, and here the 13 CO. And what they see, is a very clear anti-correlation, which indicates, written in the paper, that the two components are actually associated together, and that there are probably some H1 which provide the absorptions when you have the CO peak here. Then they can go on and do some estimates. So this would be, and I just took their text because I wanted to be unbiased, so I just took exactly what they wrote. So you may read this paragraph, I don't know if it's very easy to read or not. But even so, the density contrast is high. The atomic gas can play an important role in the dynamics of the cloud. The pressure of the H1 is sufficient to hold together those clumps in the cloud that are not self-gravitating. This has been written in 95. Okay. So this is the dynamical pressure of the H1 and of the clump, and then they can go on with their measure. Okay, you can see there is a very wide, line in H1, about 10 km per second, even larger, compatible with WM pressure, by the way. And then you can compute the pressure. So the mean density is 4 cm minus 3. And on the next page, they compute the pressure. They find that the H1 pressure is slightly larger, actually, the clump pressure, which is probably due to the uncertainties of the calculation.
It's thermal throttling,
I don't know. I say it's compatible with thermal bonding. I don't know if it's turbulent or thermal or both. I just have data here. I just say, well, it's compatible with this.
Well, it could not be.
It could not be. It could
be. There are multiple components there, right?
Yeah, but even if you take one this one here, you still have, this is 10 km per second, so you still have 5. And actually, this is probably a self-absorption. So there's structures here. Okay, they are probably what you see due to the self-absorption, actually. If you take this one, for example, here, it's very broad.
You made the same game with CO, you would say the CO is very warm, but we know it's not, because there are multiple components in CO, the individual components are always larger than thermal, and yet it sometimes it will gap.
No, I agree. I did not say it proved that it is thermal bonding. I say it's compatible with thermal bonding. Okay? So they infer a pressure which is comparable. Right?
Do you happen to know how
they infer the H1? Yeah, they took the emissions, okay, and when you have the emission, you can compute many parameters.
We also need to know the temperature.
Yes, I don't think they can infer temperature, because for that, you need to have both emission and absorptions.
Yeah, but the emission depends
on the time of the carbon is independent temperature.
Yeah, it's proportional to the column density. The absorption is proportional to current density over temperature. Okay. There is another interesting sentence they just give. So viewed in this way, the interclub gas acts as a medium to transport the pressure due to self-gravity of the cloud as a whole down to the scale of the smallest gravitationally unbound clamps. Well, again, that's written black and white here. Maybe you know it's... No, I don't know. I'm just saying that this idea has been proposed. I'm just saying this is the truth.
So they are assuming that it will be, the idea is that it is thermal pressure.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. That's the view of the paper. That it is thermal pressure.
Yeah. Well, thermal, no, maybe it's dynamic pressure. Maybe they don't say dynamics. They just said maybe this pressure here that they infer. This pressure, which is here written as the dynamic pressure, but part of the sigma square here could be sensitive. Okay, so now I'm speculating, and you can see there are a lot of question marks. So this is directly related to your question, Paolo. I don't know, again, if any of these is of any relevance, but I think. They could be emphasized. So first, I would say the cloud is already very fragmented, okay, before you make it self-gravitating, because H1 is very thermally fragmented. I mean, there is this sort of agreement with the theoreticians. Then, and I think that's another important point, that the core, the clamp, they could be self-gravitating and pressure bonded. And I think this is an important difference with what you have, say, in the thermal case, where you need the ram pressure to confine a clamp. But the ram pressure is probably, coming back and forth and is not continuously applied. And so if you are pure thermal gas, without ram pressure, then you cannot have any equilibrium. You have either to collapse or to expand. So in the case of the supersonic thermal simulation, then maybe ram pressure can help you for some times, but I doubt it can do it for very long. But okay, maybe. And there is, again, maybe some observations of this, because actually Barnard 68 is embedded into a very warm gas. Yeah.
So some of these, as you said, we know a certain mass which is rather large. It's been shown by various surveys that the alpha parameter, the Hewitt parameter of a lot of quarks is much larger than one. So, but some of these could be 100 or thousands of a mass quarks. Then you're asking a question, are they supported by thermal pressure?
Yeah.
And they need very supported thermal pressure.
Well, pressure banded.
Yeah, but on that scale,
yeah,
they are supersonically turbulent within, the turbulence is supersonic within the plants.
Yeah.
So then, if they are so really isolated from anything, you think that they are created in those initial conditions, or is it the warm gas is maintaining by upping waves?
I'm not sure how to answer this question. I mean, this object is observed. Okay, it has been mapped very carefully by many observers and described as a Bonnier Hilbert sphere. There are some debate exactly.
No, that's a small guy. That's
The general picture is that, I mean, my picture, but you cannot buy it. It's my personal opinion, just not a picture that you do in your mind. You have a GMC, okay, which forms on large scale, presumably by thermal, by gravitational instability. Well, this is my favorite pictures. And then it starts, okay, collapsing. So it generates naturally the sort of converging flow I was describing. Then you start fragmenting the WNM, forming CNM structure with maybe some mass spectrum which is similar to the CO. It keeps evolving. The gas becomes denser. The pressure of the gas increases, and you have the WNM can confine everything because it is denser than the standard ISM WNM because there are more energy flying. The physical conditions are slightly different, and therefore you end up at the end with something which is not so different from the standard ISM, except that it is denser. So instead of having, say, a contrast of 0.5 and 50. Density, cubic per density of particle per centimeter, then you have, I don't know, 2 and 1,000. So just a shift in density, but in terms of the physics or the topology, it's not so different from what you would have in standard ISM. It's just that you have shifted everything, including the pressure. Well, again, as I want to repeat, all of this is with question mark, yeah? Okay? Then there is maybe this possibility, and now I'm not so sure, because I think there is maybe an issue on the linear momentum that I realize later, so I'm not so sure, but that's coming back to the debate we have, okay? The big difference is, say, I assume a co-partition between turbulent and magnetic energy, okay, in terms of density, of energy density, but then the flux. Okay, the flux is this energy times the velocity, and the huge gain is here, the factor 10 here. So the flux of energy is very large.
That's going to be true only if the energy flux, if all the energy gets absorbed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're coming in from both sides.
Of course, there is an efficiency factor here that I don't know. So if it's 1%, then forget about it. It has to be, maybe 10%. I don't know. That's a big uncertainty, and that make all the scheme.
You weren't here, but we had a discussion about the work that Paolo did with John Salo.
Yeah. I read the paper. Yeah.
If the cloud is large enough so that all the cosmic rays are absorbed,
yeah,
then you have a huge flux of energy because the cosmic rays are about to just stream in.
Yeah. Okay.
On the other hand, if the cloud density is smaller and then the cosmic rays are coming in from both sides, then there's a very little.
Okay. Or you say they may cross the cloud and we mess.
Yeah. So, but, well, that's the thing, is that in your case, either, as I imagine, I start with a small point,
yeah,
and clearly that's true, and then there'd be critical size when they just get absorbed. But then as soon as I make the cloud any bigger, then I'll just be heating up a little skin around the boundary, and most of the volume of the
Well, I mean, I can buy your objections, and again, I think these sort of things have to be tested numerically. It's extremely difficult to speculate about what is going to happen. I mean, I'm just saying that there are reasons to worry. I agree with you that there are ways to escape this, okay? But I think you cannot reject by this kind of argument either. I mean, it's to check all these possibilities and assumptions, then it's fully nonlinear, and I think you have to set up the whole problems. That's my opinion.
But it's when we've been focusing on the fact there are observations of the amplitude of waves. Well, we actually rarely see the velocity. If you just use the observed amplitude fluctuation calculate the handle 14, that you must have done that in your paper column.
The what, sorry?
I'm just saying, we were talking here about the flux of energy, which Ed points out in pencil, if you're going to talk. Well, what if you said, well, skip the flux, we actually see the amplitude of the waves in your box?
So in the clouds, no, but you see that in the cold phase again.
Yeah, but it's going to be, I assume you can estimate what it is in the moon. If you're in the simulations, you
maybe. No, but I mean, maybe.
In the simulation, you get that globally, you get as much heating from the military as you get from the grid. That was our result. But you understand that that globally, I don't think it's much.
Yeah.
No, but while again,
although the mass fraction is so small, but these hot regions spread everywhere, not in the void.
No, but again,
I mean that's the time in
this context.
Yeah, there are simulations where the cosmic ray easily makes up by a couple of orders of magnitude.
No, but again, Paolo, I mean the setup is very different. I mean here the reservoir is finite. Okay, I think the whole issue is the reservoir energy available.
But I don't understand. You're forming the cold phase from this converging.
Well, in the simulation, yes. Yeah.
But at the same time, you say that you need that this energy, wave energy source to keep the warm neutral medium warm. Then you don't have much option. Either you keep it warm when you form a cloud. How can you put yourself in between that fire? I don't understand. Why do you form, if you really have this energy, you will not even form your cold molecular clouds from this mechanism that you're discussing, this converging flows. Because now we have this new source of energy from warming for medium warm.
No, I don't think so, because what makes it here is that in terms of mass, you don't have a much mass of W and M inside the cloud. Okay, in terms of mass, W and M is nothing. It's something in terms of pressure.
The
source, so if you try to take the whole mass, okay, of the cloud W and M, okay, and put all the cloud mass in W and M and try to heat up, then it's not going to work.
So you have just enough energy to keep 10% or 1% of the mass.
Yeah, this is once again, I don't want to push too much this calculation. I think it's just a feasibility study, and in my opinion. One needs to do very difficult numerical simulations, including self-consistently the dissipation of the waves and a sufficiently realistic molecular cloud, open and so on. So it's going to be tricky. I'm not saying it's easy, but the problem is all tricky. Again, it's extremely difficult, I think, to compute analytically the dissipation of energy inside the fluid. So,
but it's always true that in the thermal instability picture, you form first very small objects and then they merge, or is that dependent on the perturbation that you have in the initial conditions?
Well, from a perturbation? What we propose in one of our papers is that the mass spectrum of the clump, of the CO clump, or the H1 clump, reflects the perturbation induced by the turbulence taking place in W and M.
But I'm asking how do you set up your initial perturbation that decides the size of
I don't set up it because what we do in this sort of simulation I present you, we have initially uniform density, we trigger this flow with some perturbation.
Yeah.
And we wait
perturbation. What is the spectrum? What is that?
It doesn't change. You can take one or two modes, you can take a K minus or something, it doesn't change the final result, because what we do is we just let the flow flowing out, okay, and we wait to get any result until we get some statistic stationarity inside the box. So the hope that when you do that, you produce something which does not too much depends on your setup. It's a hope. I don't see how I could do much better.
It's a fact that an oblique shock in a three-dimensional box.
Yeah.
It's some kind of semi-animal setup.
Yeah.
You get something. Yeah, you get something interesting in the middle, but it doesn't spread all over the box. So it gets pretty boring.
Well, I don't know. I mean, my best answer to your question.
It's a bit like your result, where you have these long filaments, but it doesn't really spread. It doesn't get fat. It doesn't really, break it because of large scale perturbation.
But I don't know how to answer. I mean, this is my best answer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't get fat. It's a thin filament with some, but that's HD probably. Is that
MHD? No, that's not MHD.
That's MHD?
No, that's purely hydro.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But in 3D, this is the 3D result. So.
Yeah, but in MHD, my experience is that if you set up even an oblique shock or even perturbation, everything where the shock would be in the middle of the box, the interesting thing is when having a thin sheet in the middle of the box, and that thin sheet, because of the shock,
there are instability. I don't think so. We see instability, very strong instability already in 2D.
But you're not going to spread the turbulence all over the box because you have this continuum.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so because until we don't do it, I don't know, but my intuition is that we will produce these sort of things, but every layer is going to produce this, and at the end you will have a complex interaction of filaments.
But that's boring, my language.
Maybe
we should
try to rephrase what the client says. So you have this picture clearly,
yeah.
And it's a very clear picture, but it seems to me that what you're saying is that if you have lots of energy available, the weight seems to me. But I think the point you may be trying to make is that what these waves actually do by various mechanisms, as they approach these clumps, they're running up density gradients.
Yeah.
So they're going to dissipate.
Yeah.
So,
and also tangle field.
So I think what you're saying is rather than thinking of this as pressure confined by mechanical pressure of these waves, these waves dissipate. And essentially, it's that hot skin that Chris just mentioned that you're going to produce by dissipating. Effectively creates a local WNM.
Mm-hmm.
It's that pressure,
that
simple thermal pressure from that.
It's
the conversion of this wave pressure locally that's doing the job. So in effect, you've got this two-phase medium always maintained by these damping waves.
Yeah.
That's keeping this like an ISM type of model.
Yeah.
Is that a reasonable answer?
Yeah.
Okay, are you finished?
Yeah, I finished.
I think you should thank Patrick. Perhaps the people who don't want to keep on talking are welcome to leave, and those of us who want to keep on playing in the two-page, we'll stick with
it. There is a question on the validity of the assumption that giant molecular clouds or molecular clouds are any scale are self-gravitating. I think it's pretty important to make this assumption, for instance, to measure the mass spectrum.
Well, I didn't catch the beginning of what you say.
On what mass spectrum is it justified to assume that molecular clouds are self-gravitating? Because if they aren't, you couldn't use the Wigner theorem.
But I think the people who compute the mass spectrum do not make the assumption. That's something that you compute after. They have the detection, and they have the flux either by CO or by Earth or whatever. And then they can compute the mass, and then they infer the virial mass, I think the trick has probably failed at making the dot. So that's not, you don't have to assume that the molecular cloud is self-gravitating to derive any parameter.
Well, to measure molecular cloud mass spectra in external galaxies, you have to make some assumption. Either the X is the same as it is locally, or that
In the local, the observation I'm aware of.
Locally, you've got other things you can use to calibrate your relationship.
External galaxies, I think it's a usually made assumption that they're self-gravitating. They come back to the Earth theorem. So would you say there's a certain mass scale or a certain percent in the evolution time of a molecular cloud that this assumption is not valid?
What I'm aware of is a mass spectrum of CO plan, which follows some power law, say. And then the mass spectrum extends from, say, 10 to the 6 solar mass, down to maybe 1 Jupiter mass, maybe less. And there seems to be a power law over this range of observed mass.
One of the points was that certain class of clumps of a certain mass, clumps of a certain stage are not self-gravitating, but they're actually confined by external pressure.
Well, that's a non-issue, actually, and this is what part of this has triggered the second adjustment.
I think maybe you two are talking
about
you're talking about GNCs. And you're talking about all
what masses
would that actually break down?
The sort of estimate has been done by Chris, and typically it's between 1,000 gram mass and 100 gram mass, depending where you.
Yeah, but I think as Simon was saying, that actually was for the clumps inside the GMCs. Then if you look in the outer galaxy, for example, in the survey that Hire and Brunt did, then they found that the clear evidence for self-gravitation set in 10 to the fourth solar mass of the Milky Way. But of course, all the extragalactic observations, you can't see anything smaller than that anymore. But then you have to assume that you're right. I mean, there's no direct proof that they're self-gravitating mass galactic consistently. You just have to assume that they're similar there than they are here. And in similar galaxies, are, whether that's true in Starburst or something else. So can I go back to the question about, I want to try to reconcile so the simulation you did with, because, like I said, you've emphasized the flux of energy, but I still am confused about why I can not think about the flux, but just look at the amplitude of the fluctuations and calculate directly what the heating rate is, and that's what Paolo did.
But the amplitude of the fluctuations, I guess, is triggered by the dragging.
But are you saying, therefore, that the amplitude
the sources, you will measure what you put in.
Of course, to have a self-consistent theory, you have to do that. Okay, but now we measure the dense gas. Does your model assume that the amplitude is much larger in the low-density gas?
Not necessarily, no, because what you have to assume is just that you have a equipartition in energy, between the magnetic field and the kinetic motion or whatever. And then again, what makes, I think, a big difference is this flux, the fact that you have an energy input.
But you don't have to do the flux. I can look at 1 cubic centimeter, and you're saying, so maybe you're saying that in the WMM, the energy density in the fluctuating fields is equal to rho v squared, where rho is the mean density of the cloud, not the density of the warm gas.
Yes, because, there is another assumption, is that, that's... Typically, we assume here that there is an equipartition between the magnetic energy of the cloud, the cold cloud, and the kinetic energy. Okay, and then there is this other assumption, which we could also make break down, why not, that we made, that the magnetic field is going to be the same in the warm phase inside the cloud and in the cold phase, or not too different. We assume that the magnetic field is going to be also more important than what you have.
Exactly. Yeah. So the mean field strength is the same.
Yeah.
Now you're also, but in terms of the fluctuations, you're assuming that the amplitude of the fluctuations in the warm medium is the same as it is.
Yeah, typically. Again, I don't know what to answer. It's again my general answer. I think it's just a feasibility study. I think it's difficult to either confirm or reject this picture by simple arguments. Well, in my opinion, maybe you can find one, I don't know. And now what needs to be done is to go on and check whether this makes sense or not. It's going to be difficult, but...
But in terms of simulation, because Paolo has...
But I don't think that...
In terms of the magnetic field, he has the physics that you need, I think. Because he has the field moving around and everything. So because he's adjusted the driving so that you get the observed motion of the cold gas, and then the field in between the cold regions is the response.
But I guess you would say that the driving of the cold gas is not necessarily the same as the driving that determines the heating of the warm neutral medium inside the cold gas. I think that would be
that's a possibility, because the waves are rising so rapidly, they propagate very rapidly. I mean, maybe if you, I don't know, maybe your setup could be applied, it's possible if you...
Well, I mean, I could do early transfer, which is the equilibrium temperature in the lower density gas, but it's difficult to account for every relative heating because it's very intermittent.
Yeah.
It's not clear how to propagate that through the
box. Can you explain that a little bit more?
the unipolar brief heating is very intermittent. It's always unresolved, right? And because you
why did his unipolar brief heating is very smooth? So why is your
well, mine is a supraventilated simulation of the structure on the magnetic fields on very small scales, and I would guess that it should be on a smaller scale that resolved actually.
So, but again, quick, our estimate, you know, is based only on the frictions. And my view is that when you have nonlinear waves, they are going to shock anyway, and then you get probably a picture like the picture that Paolo gets. So again, this is a simplified picture for the purpose of analytic calculation, but if you ask me what I would prefer, then I prefer much sort of picture.
Well, except because of your hot medium and the high alkane velocity, you might get shocks, but they're very weak. It's a very different. It's a subsonic calculation.
Why?
But I don't think that the hot gas will affect much the dynamics of the cold gas. I don't see how.
Well, it's just by the pressure.
Pressure is a pressure. It's not moving it around, just like you said.
No. But the cold gas, we know it's moving around at a certain velocity, 2 kilometers per second. And we're not going to change that because it's an observational fact.
Exactly.
Right. So whether it's moving, plunging through a warm, cold, low density gas or something colder, warmer, who cares? I mean, it's the momentum in the cold gas is so much more than it's going to encounter in the soil.
Whether the thermal pressure in that cold clump is much larger than in the surroundings, which it is in your simulation, or whether they're basically the same.
So it affects the pressure confinement. In other words, if there is a piece of cold gas that is surrounded only by warm gas, then the pressure confinement would be different than if the gas were not warm.
Right.
So, for example, if the run pressure stops, in my case it will re-expand, in this case it will not re-expand.
Yeah, and that's the issue.
Yeah. But regarding...
In terms of dynamical properties inside the clamp,
yes.
I guess if you continuously push it, okay, dynamically, or if you let the things relax after the, say, first dynamical motions pass away and the things relax and set up into kind of equilibrium, except sometimes you can do collisions or whatever, then I think the answer in terms of what is going to happen in the clamp can be different, and therefore the dense cores which develops are going to be different, and maybe the properties of deformation.
Yeah, but then the problem is that the turbulence is observed there, so then you have to find to understand why would the same turbulence. I have a problem, and supposedly really that happened. That you only break in pieces, those pieces get kind of isolated because they have all the
around. Okay, I have something for you. Okay, I'm sure you will find some counter argument, but see. Okay, you have to find, otherwise I will be disappointed.
Well, you have a nice power spectrum?
No.
Turbulence under this conclusion?
Yes. These are H1 spectra that we produce, so not exactly CO spectra, but in the simulation we need. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so this is the synthetic spectra. If you take this one, okay, it's full of small CNN structures which fly around. It's not exactly just small sphere, okay? It's not so far from the hierarchical structure that's coming, because here you have a peak, okay, which is bigger. It's made of a smaller peak, but okay. And at the end, you find this. So, I mean, why? I mean, you have at the end something that you would interpret as a turbulence, okay? But it's composed of a lot of individual motions of well-identified clamps isolated from the rest of the cloud.
What are the scaling properties of those velocities? What are the structure functions of those velocities?
You mean in terms of Larson laws?
Larson, 0.4.
We compute them. I have them here.
So
and
the
2D.
The power spectrum is also reasonable.
I'm not speaking of power spectrum. I'm speaking of dispersion, velocity dispersion, and function of size.
But I mean, you're just saying you can't look at a broad line and say, "Oh, that's turbulence."
No. Yeah. The point is, I mean, the underlying problem here, and this is what I made this drawing in my first talk, but in this talk I to avoid debate because it's warm, as you can see here. The problem is, okay, you see motions in your cloud, okay, because you see this turbulent bonding or whatever it is called. But then you have to interpret the nature of these motions. So one possibility is the supersonic and turbulence, but here you have an example where you have a collection of clamps. Okay, and at the end you find something. If you shoot a spectra to an observer,
supersonic turbulence.
Yeah, with respect to the internal speed, definitely of the structure, because this is the WNN. So here the I don't know the sun speed is less than 1 kilometer per second, and here you have what 5
So this is warm intermedium, where are you plotting there again?
Sorry, this is a density, so here you have warm, here you have the cold peaks, here this is the density, the velocity, and here this is the H1 spectrum in emission, and that's in absorption.
The H1 spectra,
so this is proportional to the...
Of that line of sight with those fluctuations?
Of that line of sight. You integrate the signal that you would have if you would observe this.
Right. So then you play that game... by the cold gas or the warm gas?
Sorry?
Is that light spectrum dominated by the cold gas or warm gas?
It's a combination of two. I mean, absorption is mainly cold gas, and this is a mixture of cold gas and warm gas. So that's, it's not totally...
Here is that you calculate the absorption spectrum, because as you know, in the H1 spectrum...
That's the absorption, yeah.
Well, that's
the
absorption.
Yeah. So here you still have a 5 km per second, or maybe 4. So you have Mach 4 here.
So you mean the clamps are moving fast enough, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they are moving, with the velocity dispersion of the clamp is a fraction of the sound speed of the WRM.
So the idea is that what the initial conditions and the turbulence in the WNM,
yeah, trigger
where the cold gas is forming, but is basically inherited by this blob, and so they can mimic the turbulence gas they borrow from the warming.
This is exactly what the movie show you.
Yeah,
the movie show that exactly.
I like this. Is probably the most realistic initial condition for molecular cloud.
The question is,
is that all the stuff around will start to cool and it will become cold.
Yeah, so the question is that, and this is all the point here, are you going to form a nice piece of H2 screen and with no mixing, or are you going to maintain a mixing? And my connection is that, given the property of turbulence, I would be very curious to see if we could completely prevent at least to have some warm gas. Maybe we are in a situation of this weak two-phase model, so basically you don't care the mechanics of it. I'm just saying that, I'm not saying that this, that warm gas is everything. I'm just saying, well, given the data I'm aware of, I cannot judge and I cannot reject any assumptions.
So you need to do the wave heating and the energy transfer essentially to finish this?
I'd
like to go back to Simon's question earlier, where he asked whether light will get absorbed in the warm neutral medium in the atomic gas. And you pointed out about the absorption of soft X-rays. And the point is, though, that the soft X-rays get absorbed in a very short, as you emphasized, a very short length scale.
Yeah.
So that will be gone, and you're still going to have atomic gas. You haven't gotten to the molecular gas.
Yeah.
And then you would go ahead and be producing this very warm gas, outside of the molecular gas.
Yeah, maybe.
So in terms of this flux, I'm now taking energy out and wasting, quote unquote, on this gas, but because I'm going to form the shell.
Maybe.
Just step back a moment and just. What would be the larger consequences? If this picture were correct, you mix in your WNM in with the gas and maintaining it the way you're playing. Are there big consequences for the way clouds survive, or the way they create stars, or what follows from this picture that's different?
Okay, my opinion is that then one of the big differences is that you can form, say, CO clamp, okay, which are more quantitative, more quiescent, because they can relax into an equilibrium, and then the wave cause will develop into those CO clamps will be different. Cause, in my opinion, will be more quiescent. And there is this problem that when you compare the properties of the cores, for example, in a supersonic simulation of Fresnel, with the observed properties of the cores, you find it is too turbulent.
David Tilley and I have done simulations. We never found such problems.
Okay.
Because you did MHC. They did MHC.
We never had a dynamic
one.
Yeah, which compared the line profiles of...
What was the resolution of the simulation?
It was pretty good, 5.6, something like that.
5.6?
Then we got a reasonable line width. They weren't as broad as what Plessen was finding. I understand that there's difficulties there, but we never saw that. We found very reasonable line profiles. We fitted with the ammonia data. so I was never really convinced that it was a problem.
No, I mean, necessarily. I mean, that's one example. Maybe at the end you find that we get the same answer. So.
Okay, but anyway, the point is quiescent, more quiescent cores.
Well, that would be one of the points. Maybe I can go through again. I just speculate about this, but you know.
Another big point about chemistry, which I know that you and I have in common. Well, yeah, I have a bit more time to think about that, and I'm less certain that you're going to see anything in the textbook, because I was thinking of a picture where you've still got all the turbulence mixing these two phases together. In that case, we're going to keep.
I think he does that, but you're still going to be very German.
I
thought he was arguing that these things stay very separate, in which case, you're only going to have.
I think it's still going to be turbulent.
Mixing on the interfaces, which could be very thick.
So I think you could get mixing on the interfaces. Right. You were saying that you could actually form some molecules which currently have no explanation.
Yeah.
I can see any
Actually, there is, of course, another very important point that I just missed and come back to this, which is this issue about the star formation efficiency. And the age of the core as well, because one of the things that puzzled me a little is that observer seems to infer age of cores, dense cores, which is between, say, 1 triple time and 10 triple time. So between dynamical pictures and between the ambibrad diffusion pictures, say, 3, 4, or whatever. If you take the simulations, like Azuchamal simulation or superabelian simulations. The magnetic field is supercritical. You say the turbulence is not higher. So what the hell that prevents the core to collapse in that case during 3 triple time?
The core is not.
There is no turbulence, there is no magnetic field. So what do you have at the end?
There is no magnetic field.
Well, it's supercritical.
It's not so critical from the beginning, neither with respect to the thermal energy nor with respect to the magnetic energy. Yes, the world becomes supercritical.
No. I mean,
it has to dissipate.
Okay, the collapse time is G times 1 minus 1 over mu. This must be good to the figure ratio. As long as no mu is not equal to 1.
I think you have to be awfully careful about interpreting those H constraints, though, because they're generally done as even very simple models for the dynamics. And we're starting to find a lot of the dynamics affect the chemistry, which is going to affect the age constraints you can derive.
Maybe.
But the age sites are from what? From statistical comparison, of course, with or without star.
The ages. I mean, this is the work of observer. I can't describe it as good as they would, but what I understand is that they take this bunch of class 0 objects, class 1 object, class 2 object, right, and right. Star, and they normalize it, and at the end they get an age. Sorry. Well.
But from what you're saying and comments here, I guess the biggest difference would be in chemistry, yes, which would be quite profound. Yeah. Right? You've got
maybe
kind of a hot halo of the observer's colleagues and stuff.
I mean, if you get any significant mixing, I think you're going to have great difficulty not overproducing.
But still, I would like to have an answer, okay?
Yeah.
But if you want to have quiescent cores with the same turbulent property than those we have observed, what observers say is that the turbulent support is weak. So if you want to have a supercritical magnetic field, then the turbulent support is weak. So how can you explain that the cores do not collapse in 1 triple time?
I think they're starting to collapse somehow.
But then you have 1 triple time.
What would be the problem then?
Well, because the observation suggests it's several.
Yeah.
Well, the observations are.
Okay, no, I mean, okay, if you say your calculations are wrong, then I resign. And,
no, they're not wrong. Yeah. There are certain sort of vector of free in the age, come on.
Yeah, if you're looking at something like CSO and H3 and then trying to fit a chemical model to get an age from that.
I think it's like you were saying, it has to do with the comparison of the class 0-1, all the different classes of cores they see, and they attach an age. So it's true, you can say that those ages are uncertain by a factor 2, but those are random, that is, of any given source. But if you want to say that, since you count these objects, you'd have to change the timescale for all objects by factor three in order to solve.
But why is the pressure confinement helping you to slow down the collapse?
Well, because in my opinion, then what happens is that you create pockets of gas, okay, which is not necessarily self-gravitating. It is confined, so it is perfectly applicable there.
But the observers will know if the scores are self-gravitating or not. If they're not self-gravitating, there will be an issue, right?
No, let me finish.
Okay.
Let me finish. So you create the structures here, okay? And they are sometimes accreting a little bit of mass, maybe doing some small collisions, and then they can reach the point where they can become self-gravitating in a much more gentle way than what we have in the dynamical picture. They are not creating a single shock. Okay, they can create more progressively and develop. You may have this pressure in the sphere, and then it becomes a little bit more thick and so on, and at the end it will collapse. So it may depend on the accretion.
But the observed problems you're raising is for bound cores. It's not for cores that are not gravitationally bound. So how do you help those not collapse?
If they're not bound,
they can't collapse. If the core they are talking about, the they say, how come did this core take 4 dynamical time to collapse instead of 1? It's because they know observation that they are gravitationally bound. They're supposed to collapse, but they don't do it as fast.
No.
They're not picking up on bound structure. They hope only.
No, remember, those numbers are uncertain. There's no precise definition of what something is bound.
But if the cores are not
going to
be bound, then it will be transient. Then it will be transient cores. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
It could be structure.
I mean, if only 20-30% of the cores were bound, we wouldn't have a problem.
That's not a problem.
No, again, you ask me to speculate on what's going to be different, so I'm trying to scale the color, but there are question marks everywhere here.
But the chemistry is probably the most.
Water in particular is something that's going to be interesting to try and compute how much water you have.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's something you form effectively in hot gas by neutral-neutral reactions. And yet, that's something where we have pretty stringent limits on that, how much you have in the cloud.
Yeah.
That's true for the. Because my understanding is that CH plus is the big district. It requires.
Yeah.
At least the known paths require hot temperatures. But I'd appreciate what you're just saying. So we have high CH plus and low H2O.
Yeah.
So are there any CH plus production models that are consistent with that, or do they all produce water also?
Really, they have this MHD shock, or you infer somehow a hot event. Okay, so some way of heating the gas. So the two models I'm aware of are the sea shock by Pierre Desforêts and co-workers, and the vortexes by Edith
Sefagaros. Exactly. They heat the gas. I'm just wondering what Sally is saying. Once you get hot gas, you're going to make water.
Is it because of the higher density you don't get so much water?
I think it does depend on what visual extinction you're doing with that, because water is quite easy to. I'm not sure that there are well accepted models for the CH plus that don't run into problems like overproducing something else. I don't really have a good answer.
Okay, well, it's one thought. Why don't we thank Patrick?